And we're live again. Check, check. Everything's good. Hello and welcome to today's Plumbers of Data Science stream. Today we're going to look at another case study. Today we're going to look at data engineering at Twitter. Twitter, very, very well-known platform. Very well known for their APIs, for their data engineering, data science, for analyzing tweets, for being one of the first platforms who leveraged data very, very well. And so today we are going to look into Twitter. I'm just checking if there is someone here. Hello, hello. Not seeing a chat. I hope this works. Not hearing otherwise. Hi, Nick. Welcome back. Yeah. Okay, so let's start. So today, again, we're starting with Twitter. I'm on Twitter for a long time, but I have to say I'm not really using Twitter anymore. I wish to use something like Twitter anymore. I don't know if how it's for you guys. I have the feeling that on Twitter it's not the same anymore. You cannot inject yourself into conversations of people that well, especially in the data science realm. It's very, for me, it's very disappointing when you look at Twitter. And let me just share my desktop here. So, for instance, here's my Twitter. And I'll make it a bit bigger. And so let's look for a... So, Twitter, you all know, you have your tweets. And tweets, they were 140 characters, now they're 280 characters. So you can search for hashtags like the hashtag data science. And my beef with Twitter is when you look at the hashtag and you, for instance, go newest, there are almost no conversations here. It's either bots or companies who are tweeting stuff, or people are tweeting stuff and nobody's talking. So nothing. It's not, that was me. So more or less nothing. If you go to the top tweets as well on data science, nothing. 3 retweets, 7 likes. Well, this one, but this is, again, this is Accenture. So it's there are no individuals here. Almost no. Here's someone that has 1 reply 11 hours ago. So this is a bit my beef with Twitter. But in essence, what Twitter is about, I have collected some statistics. They say Twitter has 335. Can I make this bigger here? 335 million monthly active users, and 500 million tweets are sent per day, or roughly 8,000 a second. This is from statistics from, I guess this is from last year. Was that from last year? So the post is from this year. Yeah. A lot of Twitter accounts held outside of the US and so on. But the most interesting thing here is how many tweets are sent. So there are a lot of tweets sent and a lot of monthly active users, which for me, it's not, it's more, Nick already says it. Twitter is a marketing tool hardly used by US companies. Sometimes there's a lot of conversations under the tweets, but it's more or less degraded to a marketing tool. There are some people there, still there, who are still doing some cool stuff and around them, interesting conversations evolve. But in our realm, I wish I would have a platform where I could just go and share my thoughts on some topics. But if you go Twitter, Instagram, nothing really works. LinkedIn, I have some beefs with LinkedIn, but this is a topic for some other times. So, okay, so you can see Twitter has a lot of monthly active users and a lot of tweets are sent per day. And what Twitter, is a cool thing about Twitter, and this is for the engineering guys, the APIs of Twitter. Twitter has really good REST APIs and really good documentation of the REST APIs. And so, for instance, you can do basically everything, tweets, you can send direct messages, look at trends and so on through the API. So for instance, if you want to get a tweet timeline, there is an API for it. You have an overview of the API. And basically what it returns. And then they have some guides. And then they also have a API reference where you can say, see exactly what you get. So let's say here for get status as user timeline, you have the user timeline, and then you can, this is the link to the API. And then you have the parameters that you can offer or that you can send with the API. And then, for instance, get information for this user. And so then you it's a really good documentation. Here's the example request, here's the example response, and what you can do with it. So really, really good responses and documentation. And Twitter API is for me the gold standard of how a API documentation is done. One thing that I want to share with you here regarding APIs, a lot of people, and I have done this mistake as well, a lot of people are naming their APIs REST APIs. And instead, what they should do is RPC calls, remote procedure calls, because not every API or JSON API is a REST API. What I have learned the hard way, I would say, is the main thing for REST APIs, that or the difference between a REST API and a normal API or a normal RPC call, is that you can use links within the API. So you get links to your to multiple let's say addresses or to the APIs where you can get some more information out of it. Shall we just make it quick? I haven't planned this, but there is I don't know if you know this, the Star Wars API. Let's just get this up. So this is a quick improv. The Star Wars API is a good example for how a REST API works. And what you can see, for instance, if you are in the API and you are with your request people one, you get, for instance, Luke Skywalker. And then you have one of the JSON attributes here is, or the JSON objects is films. And within the films, you have an array of another of links in the API. So this means that you are here in people one, and you or a system can find automatically the API call that it needs to go deeper. For instance, here, if you request films 2, Empire Strikes Back. And then you have again links to characters, to vehicles, to species, and more and more and more. So so there's a difference between remote procedure calls, just dump calls, where you just say, here's the parameters, give me the example back. But so you might bear in mind, this is I have done this wrong myself, and Twitter is a really great API where you can get this. How was that? That was here somewhere. Was that tweet timelines? I used this some time ago, and there should be a self. Was that? Wasn't that here? No. Where was that? Tweet post retrieve engage with tweets. Search tweets. I don't really know where this was. But usually if you hi Rich. Richard is also from Germany, and he's also working in data science or data engineering, better said. So you can retrieve or engage with tweets here, and you're always getting JSONs back from the APIs. So this is the first thing that is interesting from for Twitter. How are APIs done, and how could you build your own APIs with that? This is a good reference, a good example of how to build a nice API. Okay, let's move on. Another thing, if you look at the Twitter platform itself, what I have found on SlideShare, let me just check that I don't have, that I don't miss some. Okay. Basically, the whole platform, how that looks, is they have batch and real time streams, and they say batch is more of a Hadoop with HDFS and MapReduce thing, and real time is with EventBus. EventBus is something they have developed within Twitter. This is more or less something like Kafka, but not the Kafka. Let me just get this bigger for you. We come to this real-time event bus and Kafka streams in a second. And then they have the analytics tools, which, for instance, a batch is you find again Spark. And real-time, the Heron platform, which is the version 2 of their Storm system. We get to that also. And then they're doing some other stuff. I don't know this stuff here. I know, but Summing Bird, I'm guessing this is also something from Twitter. And then they have analytics front ends with custom dashboards, Tableau, Apache Zeppelin, which is also interesting. I like this as well, and command line tools. Okay, so super command line tools, super basic. This is from January 27th, 2017. So this is a bit more than 2 years old. Just let me go over this quickly. Platform. They say they have store hundreds of petabytes of data and more than 100,000 daily jobs. The interesting thing here is they say they have hundreds of petabytes of data. So how does that fit together? So if you, let's say you're doing some calculations. You're doing some calculations like you have you have a tweet. Tweets 280 characters, and one character is 4 bytes. So 280 characters multiplied by 4. So you have 1,120 bytes per tweet. And then you multiply this with 500 million. 103, yep, bam, and then you have this in bytes, and then to get to megabytes, you I'm not seeing this correctly here. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. I think I need a new glasses. So this is megabytes. So 560 gigabytes per day, and let's say 560 times 365. I'm guessing I have done an error here, but 204 terabytes. So 204 terabytes the year, and then they say they have hundreds of petabytes of data. So how does that, how do you think that's happening here? So the raw, or what's happening here, the raw information of a tweet or of all the tweets is about, in 2018, about 204 terabytes a year. And they say they have hundreds of petabytes. This shows you how much information there is generated on the platform. Not only from the user inputs, but all the metadata in the background, all the analytics data that they're running with, the replication factors, and so on and so on and so on. So you can see there is a lot going on here, which drives the user data, the actual tweet data that is in the system, which drives that a whole level or two levels higher, which I find super interesting. Or I have done some calculations wrong, but I would have guessed that by now somebody would have screamed, dude, this is completely wrong. Let's go back to the real-time event bus thing here. What I have found, it's interesting that Twitter's Kafka adoption story, so they haven't done Kafka all the time or from the beginning. They used their own system, and then they tried out to go to Kafka, because with their event bus system, a in-house publish and subscribe software, that didn't go nowhere. They say it here, why move? For IO operations, majoring catch-up reads, lack of durability and replication, all problems for them. And also what they write is that Kafka basically wasn't there or wasn't good enough in the past, but for the in the meantime, the development on the Kafka platform has went so well and is so interesting that they can use it now and they could test it. And yeah, where they were really interested in was the latency, basically the latency between a publish from the client into the consume from the consumer. And this is where Kafka shines regarding the latency, because it's way, way lower than event bus. And they say this might be because what they did with event bus is that when you do writes, it goes to a write proxy, and then you have a different layer. This is basically a storage layer, a bookkeeper layer, and you have a latency between here, and then with the requests or the reads or the consumes, you have again here a latency. And so this is the problem that you have with this, with their own system, and with Kafka you don't have this. So have they said here how, I was under the impression that they said here how faster this is, but I'm not sure. No, I can't find it anymore. So they had some resource savings because of that. Yeah. So as always, guys, you can go deeper in the whole thing, and you can look at all the articles later, because I'm going to put them in the description of the video as always. So I'm moving on. Nick says they tried to tame Storm and created Heron on base of it. But now they run Kafka, as far as I know. No, Kafka is basically before the whole thing. Kafka is, if you go, let's go back. So Kafka is before the analytics, before the real-time analytics Heron. So this is as I understand it, before we are going to get to Heron in a second. But basically, what, as I understand it, what they're doing is they're sending data in, or your data is getting in from this side, and then they're sending it, or they're consuming it with Heron, and then they're doing analytics and so on. Yeah, so this is interesting. Check this out. Another thing that I have found. Guys, should we go to Heron directly, or are you interested in some, or should we first do something with how they moved from on-premise to the cloud? What's your thought on this? Heron? I'm guessing the delay is as well. Is again a bit higher here. Let's just continue with how I set it up. So, interesting thing is when you think about they have hundreds of petabytes of data, and they're consuming that much information every second, and you think, wow, they must have a super duper crazy cloud deployment with crazy systems, or yeah, what is the setup of all this? And the interesting thing in this is a completely a absolutely new post. This is from April 8th this year, and they say partly cloudy, their start of the journey into the cloud. So Twitter is on premise. Twitter is not in the cloud. They started to go into the cloud. They use Google Cloud, but they are on premise. They have hardware. They have real servers, not some virtual stuff. They have real things. So they decided to let's try and go to the cloud and look what the cloud has to offer. And I wish I had a option to mark when I research, to mark some information here, so I find it better. So yeah, one interesting thing, they operate Hadoop clusters. So they operate a lot of Hadoop clusters. Was that already here? How much they operate? No. What was that? So they have real-time clusters, are where we land the incoming data generated by end users in the course of using Twitter. Interesting, real-time cluster. Then processing clusters, where we run regularly scheduled production jobs. Okay. Ad hoc clusters for one-off queries, occasional analytics, and dedicated dense storage clusters for less frequently used data for let's say cold storage. And what they said, when migrating to the cloud, the same basic setup and upfront work is required no matter the mission critical nature of the cluster or workload. So they selected use cases that benefit from the cloud and that are not so risky to take the whole thing down. So for Twitter, it's the ad hoc and cold storage use cases that are going to the cloud. So the live system, the live analytics, the actual user interactions, this stays on-premise for now. They just moved the less critical systems to the cloud. This would be what I would have done as well. So the not mission critical things, let's go there. And this is why they call it partly cloudy, because they move it partly. Where was that? What was that exactly? They have written some stuff about how the setup was looking. Our data infrastructure alone ingests over a trillion events, processes hundreds of petabytes, and runs many tens of thousands of jobs on over a dozen clusters each day. So they have dozens of clusters. So wasn't there some indication of machines? Okay, can't find it. So they were looking into a partnership, and they partnered with Google Cloud, and then they are working on the first step. So this is also, they say this is the first blog post in this series, and they're if you're interested in helping our journey, we are hiring. Yeah, of course. I find it super interesting that they are not on the cloud, that they are on premise, and that they can work on premise, and that they are so cost efficient on premise, because you would think that a company like Twitter that is processing so much data, that they're in the cloud, but they're not. Okay, let's move to, so this is on the, also this is on the Twitter infrastructure blog, or Twitter engineering blog. They have there a lot more more things. I'm a bit confused because did I miss another post I researched today? Okay, it doesn't matter. So about Heron, how does that work? That works a bit different than what we know from Spark. Spark basically works with micro batches in the streaming section. So what you do is you run a job every few seconds, and that takes in data from Kafka, processes it, and then you have an output, and then the next job comes, and then the next job. So micro batches in predefined slots, predefined starting, could you say starting positions? You get what I mean. You get it. And So with Heron, it's a bit different, because what you want is when your tweet comes up or when you post a tweet, this should be up almost instantly and processed, and you have the hashtags and you want to index the hashtags and everything. So it's findable. It can be, people can interact with it. And the idea what they have is, first they can build topologies. So these are more or less processing frameworks or processing, you can stitch together processing jobs, what you do with incoming data from the spouts. So this is where the source of data tuples for the topology. This is more or less a tweet, for instance. And then you have the bolts. The bolts are the processing of the tuples of the spouts. And the idea here is that what you can do with Heron is, let's say I write a tweet, then this spout here is the tweet. This goes into bolt one, and when it's processed by bolt one, it gets processed by another one, bolt four. And you can join it with other bolts, or you can make this even bigger, and you can basically do very, very cool or complex things live without waiting for batches. Every one of the tweets are getting processed instantly. And before here, as I understand it, before here, there sits the Kafka and basically pushes the stuff or ingests the stuff, and the Heron system then ingests or consumes from the Kafka in parallel. Yeah. Well, Heron, this is maybe not the best slide slide deck. Another one. Yeah, here's again how they work with the bolts. So you can, as it here's Twitter source, tweet spout, parse tweet, bolt, and then you do a word count bolt, for instance. And so you can build in a topology very, very complex things. And another thing is that they can work parallel. So everything can be parallel here. The bolts work in parallel. The spouts create data in parallel. And so it's you have this parallel structure where the origin of the data is or the creation of the data in Heron or the ingest is in parallel. So you have Kafka parallel, then you have Heron, which creates the spouts parallel, then they are processed by the bolts in parallel. And yeah, you can work very, very efficiently. And then you can group and shuffle and so on. And how this is then executed is you have containers and different bolts and different spouts run on different machines or different containers. And so you can distribute it over the machines or over the hardware machines. And you can work very, very efficiently. And I like this whole thing. They have examples how this works and so on. So cool thing, really cool thing. There is also a video that I have found regarding what they are doing on the Google Cloud platform. And let me just mute it. One thing that I found interesting is, let me just see if I can find it. Which guy was thinking? They're using Bigtable and distributed persistent multidimensional sorted map. So sorted and table structured schema, but it's row oriented. And What was that? Let's just pause here. You can see with Bigtable, you have column families, you have column qualifiers, you have the row keys, and I don't know if you already know this, but this is more or less HBase. It's exactly the same thing within Apache HBase that you run on a Hadoop cluster. This is exactly it. And I think if you're on HBase, it says something that it, yeah, it comes from Google, modeled after Google's Bigtable. So this is, yeah, this is not something very, very crazy. It's more or less HBase, which I found hilarious. They you see the same, you see the same stuff everywhere. They have the same three-dimensional structure that within HBase, if you write a value, you have the row key and the column families, and if you write a value, the value can have basically three layers. You can update, it has a timestamp, and you, whenever you override it, you can have the three or the other two last values saved. So you can access the previous values within the system. And this is exactly, it's more or less exactly the same thing here. Just on the cloud and without you of need to running HBase. Yeah, this is a 35-minute video. I have just this stuff here, the visualization stuff wasn't interesting for me. Maybe it's for you. They have some crazy visualization things here. That wasn't so interesting for me. And yeah. All right, I think I'm already through. Man, this time I was running through the whole thing. statistics. Yeah. HBase is open source, Bigtable. Yeah, I think what I have remember is it's not 100% the same thing, but it's, as they say in HBase, it's modeled after Bigtable. So yeah, this is what I always say to guys, is that you don't need to know all the tools. You need a key value. You have a key value store. Why not go with for a Hadoop platform, learn HBase, and then you see stuff like Bigtable here. That is more or less HBase again. Then if you look at AWS, DynamoDB, and do they have it here somewhere? Getting started. Come on, FAQs. So, okay, I don't find it in this. Short amount of time, but DynamoDB, the same thing. DynamoDB as well, key value store, exactly the same thing like HBase. You can use it. Yeah, it's, I would say it's more like HBase, but from what I have seen, but yeah, it's the same. It's the same stuff. It's always a bit different, but yeah, was there something else here? Let me just get here on the engineering infrastructure thing. Journey into the cloud. I think I have I load testing to scale with Lago. I think I missed something. The infrastructure behind Twitter. Overview of Twitter fleet. Database in Bloom. Hadoop. Key value stores. Mesos front end. Yeah, distribution of hardware. Interesting. Huh. Haven't even seen this one here. From when is that? January 2017. Okay. They have a lot of text and it's not that easy. To just do it live here. Okay. But I'm going to put the link to this one as well in the description, so yeah. Yeah, comparison table. Let's Google something. Where's my other desktop? Gone. Let's just Google something. DynamoDB versus Bigtable versus HBase. Everything's here. DB engines. Can we add here? Please select another system to include in the comparison. Cassandra. Okay, Nick, here's the comparison table. So now I'm getting problems here with this. Can I zoom this at least a bit? So with DynamoDB, they say hosted scalable database service. Schema free, of course, everything is schema free. Typing indexes. Huh. Okay, I don't know if this helps a lot. I'm a bit disappointed in this table. Related products and services, more resources. So maybe DynamoDB is white column store based on ideas of, so Cassandra is based on Bigtable and DynamoDB. And what they say here, Apache Hadoop on concept of Bigtable. So yeah, as you can see, this is, they are all related, this stuff. Yeah, it's hard to Nick says, yeah, good site, but they don't have a Kudu storage engine from Cassandra, from Cloudera yet. Yeah. It's the whole comparison stuff, it's not that easy, but as you can see, they all use the same stuff, and they all look at what the other stores are doing, and yeah, it's almost, yeah, it's almost the same stuff. Okay, let's just, is there something more interesting? Search relevant infrastructure on Twitter. This makes no sense. Okay, yeah. I don't have more prepared. This was already everything I had. So, questions. What do you think? Is that interesting? Twitter. Are you impressed or are you not impressed? What's your thought? I'm impressed that they're still on hardware, that they're still on premise. They have multiple data centers and so on, and they're not mentioning everything. Let me just switch through the scene. They're not mentioning everything, of course. But make it happen in hardware. There you can see how good the hardware is and how efficient it is to use hardware. And of course, somewhere partly, they were talking of scaling. While we had proven that we could be cost efficient at scale using on-premise infrastructure, and this is what I was looking for. So they have proven in-house that they can be cost efficient, cost effective at scale and using hardware. But they had a motivation to go to the cloud. And they were looking at elasticity and scalability and a broader geographical footprint. So this is what I wanted to also say. So it makes sense to go to the cloud. Also for them, a company worldwide has a worldwide offering. And scalability, of course, with hardware, you cannot scale as fast as if you're on the cloud and if you're on virtual servers or on tools like Bigtable that are more or less serverless. I think Bigtable is like DynamoDB. You don't need to order servers. You're paying in storage, right? I think so. Yeah. Okay. That's it. I'm leaving you a few seconds for getting in the chat, and then we're going to finish this off here. All right, then depends on what you mean by we, Nick. What do you mean by, so we would have everything in the cloud soon? Generally, or in the Twitter use case? Because the cloud has some upsides. The on-premise has some plus. Let me just. I don't understand. Hadoop ecosystems, what do you mean by that? You move the Hadoop ecosystems into the cloud, or you use different systems at all? The end of Hadoop. because a lot of companies, what they're doing as well is they run their, or what a lot of guys are doing is they run all their Hadoop on in the cloud. They're not using the cloud systems. They are still running Hadoop. And where's my overview? Okay, I don't know. So, Nick, maybe write this to me. I don't want to leave you guys hanging here. That's it for today. Oh, as far as I know, some big companies start to move their data into the clouds. AWS, Google Cloud Platform, Azure. Yeah, of course. But there are good reasons to not do it, or there are good reasons for on-premise, and there are also good reasons for the cloud. For instance, if you look at where I'm working a lot of in the Internet of Things field, and if you look at industries or at production plants, and when you are going into getting data from machines, you get a lot of data from machines. And when you collect a lot of machines, just one second, guys, I need to check something. Okay, all good. When you get a lot of data from machines, at some point it doesn't really make sense to upload everything to the cloud, because you cannot upload it to the cloud, because it's the amount of data that is getting generated is more than you could ever upload to the cloud or connect to the cloud. So it makes sense to build on-premise clusters where you work with the data and you upload like Twitter, you upload aggregations or cold storage to the cloud, and then analyze on the cloud. But the live data, the live analytics, you keep on premise, because it's way better there. Or for privacy reasons, some data should not go to the cloud because it's mission critical, or it's for privacy reasons or something. This is also a good reason for staying on premise. I had a whole list. I was looking on the monitor for the list, but I cannot find, because I was planning two I'm planning two offline videos next week, Monday and Wednesday. I'm going to be on a business trip, so I'm going to upload some videos when I usually stream, or maybe Monday I can stream. I don't know how the hotel has how the access is in the hotel. And I was planning two videos, one the cloud versus on-premise, and another like Hadoop or more general systems versus how is that called cloud agnostic or basically tools for the companies from cloud companies. But anyway, so there are good reasons to stay on-premise. Cannot upload everything for privacy, or if you want to have a good connection or between systems, that you have a lot of on-premise systems, like other on-premise systems, legacy systems, or stuff like SAP, where you do all your business stuff with, and you want to send this to your data, and you don't want to connect this to the cloud because it's on-premise, and this is absolutely mission critical, and it has valuable information of how much you earn and how the processes are in your company. So you don't want to upload this stuff to the cloud. So it makes sense in a lot of cases to stay on premise. Yeah. Okay, guys. That's it for today. Next stream will be on Friday. I'm not sure what to do on Friday. Leave a like if you like this stream, and share it on social media, and then we see each other on Friday. What I'm going to do, I'm going to do something new here. After the stream, I'm going to quit the stream now, and after the stream, I'm coming back on, and I'm going to, I'm going to play some stuff on my PlayStation for about 45 minutes. So if anybody wants to hang and just relax, and because I'm playing this crazy hard game right now, will not stay up. It's just something else, and so like a offline a after stream hangout. I'm going to come on again. Something with solar, LinkedIn, for example. Okay, I'm going to look into it. Good example. Yep. All right. Maybe till later. Maybe till Friday. Have a great week, and see you then. Thanks for watching, and bye bye. I'm back in 5 minutes.